The Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network is brought to you by Onyx Hunt. Bringing you the best GPS mapping software directly to your smartphone or desktop, Onyx offers you the ability to see property boundaries, mark waypoints, track your location, and so much more. Visit onyxmaps.com or you can download it directly from your app store today.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and the Backcountry Rookies is designed to prepare, inspire, and educate hunters to head west for a backcountry big game hunt. Join us in our journey as we prepare and educate ourselves as well as others to be prepared for the hunt and to never stop learning. The Backcountry Rookies podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. It's the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform that you can find anywhere. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting covers every step of the elk hunting process. Use the promo code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Now let's get to the show. All right, welcome back to the show. Today I have Travis Greenwood and Scott Daniels from Team Bad Decision. You guys might remember them. I had them on last year. Do you guys remember when? I don't remember exactly when you guys came on.
I think it was April or May.
April or May, right. And they came on to talk about a book that had been released, and we're going to get into that. And it's a book that Travis wrote with the help from Scott. And we'll touch on that. But I really just brought them back on because they did a lot last year during hunting season, and they got a lot planned this year. And we just, I don't know, they're cool guys. So I brought them on so we could BS a little bit. Introduce yourself, guys. Travis, I'll let you go first. Just kind of a quick intro in case people didn't listen to the last podcast.
Sure. So I'm Travis Greenwood. I live in the Tri-Cities in Washington State. And besides being a hunter, I work for the Bonneville Power Administration, which is high voltage electrical work, and I like to kill stuff. So
there you go. Scott?
I'm Scott Daniels. I live in Tacoma, Washington. Travis and I have been hunting together for 6-7 years at this point. And I'm a diesel mechanic for work, and I've got a wife and a little girl, and...
Oh, I suppose I also have a family. I should include those in occasionally, right?
Yeah. Okay.
I like hunting around the West.
Yeah, right on. So you guys are both always go-tos. I know if I post some question somewhere on Facebook or whatever, that I'm going to get either a really, really good answer or I'm going to get a really, really smart-ass answer from Scott. One of those two. And sometimes it's hard to decipher between which one it is. But these guys are both full of knowledge and really, really good resources for info. So you mentioned you've been hunting together for about 8 years. How'd that all start? How'd you guys link up and come to know each other?
It was like a
match made in heaven. Is that what you were going to say?
It was, Tinder for hunters. We both swiped right.
Yeah.
Started hanging out together.
Uh-huh. Very good.
Planned a scouting trip together to see if we worked out in the mountains, and, you know, just kind of haven't really slowed down since.
Good. It seems like you guys get together. Whenever you get together, it goes well, at least from what I've seen on social media and last time when we talked. So that's cool, man. I'm glad you guys found each other. It's a perfect relationship.
We've joked about it, but it's not really all that much of a joke. Finding a good, solid hunting partner might be harder than finding a spouse.
Yeah, it's fun. You mentioned that. So I was on the podcast the other day with another Pacific Northwester, Johnny Mack, and we were talking about social media and the power of social media. And he talks about that, about how he met his wife online, and he said it was easier to meet his wife than it was to find a hunting partner online when it comes to like looking for people out there. So I kind of totally agree with that. Everybody's sketchy about meeting some guy on the internet that they can go hunting with, but they'll swipe right for about anybody on those dating apps.
There's different motivations.
I think so.
A little more palatable. So
yeah, I think you might be right. You might be right about that. So, well, all right, man, let's move in. What have you guys been up to? Last year you had a couple of hunts. What was going on last year? How'd it go?
Well, Travis had some family medical issues come up, and so he wasn't able to come on our September elk hunt. So it was my first time hunting archery elk solo in the wilderness. That was an interesting and eventful hunt that didn't end successfully, but it was still a good time. We went on a mule deer hunt in November that was chock full of success. We went on a spring bear hunt in Idaho with a couple other friends in May.
Mm-hmm. And that one was not as successful either, but we learned a lot on
yeah,
that one.
Yeah, so. It was, you know, we probably didn't give ourselves quite enough days to walk into sight unseen, brand new country in an over-the-counter unit.
Well, and it didn't help. We actually had found out that a guide had been in there the week before and killed, I think, four bears.
I thought it was eight.
Eight bears. They killed a ton of bears in that basin like the week before. So we were a couple days late.
We thought that, you know, backpacking into the wilderness like 10 miles, that we'd be away from the pressure of baiting and so forth. But that wasn't the case. This outfitter has this entire basin baited up on horseback and had been for about a month prior to bringing his clients in.
Wow. When did you guys find out about that? Probably after the hunt.
on the way out, we ran into another guy, and he had kind of dropped that info for us. We had been sitting there resting about 50 yards from his bait site and had no idea it was there. So
wow, well, that's unfortunate. I guess you never know that though, right? I mean, how do you do that? I guess maybe showing up at the local coffee shop and asking around or something, but that's hard to research that.
We did see a lot of bears in the neighboring unit. You know, it's a big piece of country where you can really let the glass do the work. And we ended up seeing 11 bears. They were just not quite in killable locations.
Yeah. Well, we had one, but it was a sow of the cub. Right. So it's actually, it's frowned upon in Washington, but it's illegal in Idaho. So, but that was our only real opportunity. She popped out at like 100 yards.
Gosh, that was cool.
That was really cool. Yeah, she was little too. She was maybe 100.
It was definitely her first cub.
Yeah, it was her first cub for sure. So.
Cool. Well, that's interesting. Scott, you said it was unsuccessful. I have a question then. How do you measure success, and why do you call it unsuccessful?
Well, punch tags. Okay. Antlers on the roof coming home. Meat in the freezer.
All right. So I mean, that's it. A lot of people say that. I mean, going out there by yourself solo, I think you would have to have learned some stuff. And you brought, like, to me, I measure success a lot of times on what I learned. I'm so new to this hunting in the backcountry that I really don't expect to punch tags. But if I learned something that I did wrong, to me, that's a good trip.
Oh yeah, I definitely learned a lot, and it was my first time hunting solo in the backcountry in grizzly country. So that was kind of a, you know, like a personal growth portion of it, becoming okay with that and having to kind of process those thoughts when you're up there and everything's a little bit more turned up every time you hear a stick break or you're trying to take a midday nap, and it's a little different.
How did your midday naps go?
I didn't take any.
I didn't. I was wondering about that.
I tried, and every time that I would kind of start to nod off, I would pop back up and, you know, be like glancing around. And I'm not a real like excitable guy in that, but it's a little different. And so, you know, dealing with that for 7 or 8 days, however long I was there, you know, it's just a different factor.
Sure.
And when I was talking to the bio for that area beforehand, that wasn't a topic of conversation for me, but it was so funny that he was saying that when he gets someone from out of state calling, 85% of the first question is, does this mountain range have grizzlies or, you know, whatever, because all of the little island mountain ranges in Montana.
Yeah.
It's just a super common question for him.
Wow. Did you prepare? Did you take anything different for that hunt? For
bears? I brought some bear spray. I have a big heavy ass 44 pistol too. And I left that in the truck. And I figured that if I was seeing tracks around my camp, or, you know, my stuff was getting messed with, or I had an elk hanging in a tree or whatever, that if I had some issues, I could always go back and get it. It wasn't terribly far to hike out, but I really didn't want to tote that thing up the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm sure that's a big old heavy beast. I've looked many times at getting a little Glock 10 millimeter or something that's a little bit lighter weight. But this podcast is brought to you by Go Hunt Insider, the fastest, most accurate way to plan for a hunt. Go Hunt Insider gives you draw odds, statistics, in-depth unit analysis, interactive maps, historical weather patterns, and much more to help you plan for that upcoming hunt. Use the code ROOKIES when you purchase Go Hunt Insider and get $50 in store credit to use in the Go Hunt gear shop. What about bear fence? Did you look at bear fence or anything for camp?
Yeah, so we actually did invest in one of those.
Because we're getting it for Alaska anyways.
Right, but it was kind of one of those things, like we're going to hunt, you know, that mountain range in Montana again. We had this Alaska trip kind of on the forefront. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of an investment. We got the UDAP one. It's real lightweight. It's like 4 pounds with batteries and everything.
Wow.
And it's pretty packable. So I brought that with me, but I didn't end up using it. I think mostly out of laziness at first. I got there real late and I just got to hunting, and I didn't have any bear issues to, you know, to speak of. So it just went unused.
Yeah. I'm really curious. What batteries does that thing take?
Like, it takes two D batteries.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's not bad. Yeah. So I took two batteries in it and then two spares.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's supposed to last a week, right?
No, it's supposed to last like 20 something days, I think.
20 days on two D's.
Batteries. Now obviously its output is gonna change that a little bit if it gets, you know, if it shocks something a couple times. Yeah. That might be a factor.
Can you turn up the output on it? Like, can you make it a super electric or whatever current it runs?
No, it's okay. Just a
one shot deal.
A set it and forget it kind of thing. But okay. It's got more than like one output, you know, worth of juice in it. The things that make it more effective are things like ground moisture and how conductive everything is. That's affects it more than anything.
Right. Okay. Cool. Cool. Well, that's certainly a topic I didn't know we were going to touch on today, but I'm glad we did. Cause I've seen those things used before, but I've never really hunted up that far north in that kind of bear country. So I've never put a lot of thought into them, but
bear fences are tough too, because, you really don't know their effectiveness until you actually need it. And right. So we're either going to be eaten or not. And so then I'll let you know how it works.
My worry more than anything was like getting our gear messed with, you know, not necessarily like being all fearful of the bears, but like the last thing I want is some bear to be curious and come in and smell my nasty ass sleeping bag and shred that thing. We get back from a long night on a headlamp hike and all of a sudden, all we have is, you know, feathers everywhere.
Yeah. Tent full of feathers. Yep. I could see that. What tent were you using out there?
A big Agnes copper spur.
Okay. Just a little pop up then. Two man pop up.
It's a three man. So, I don't own a single man tent. And you know, I don't do a ton of solo hunting. So it's kind of, it's what I have, and so it's what I had to lug up the mountain. I would have preferred something a little lighter, but as far as for two guys, you know, both Trav and I are like adult size men, and so that three man is a really great size for actual two guys to use.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's I think like 90 inches long and like 70 inches wide with big vestibules.
Okay, yeah, so two guys, couple sleeping pads, big sleeping bags, and some gear and whatnot all fits in a three man for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's tight.
We both run long, wide pads. And so, you know, your typical two man is only in that 50 inch range. So we're like legit shoulder to shoulder if we don't run a three man.
Yeah. I've kind of always found that with tents. For me, I'm a big dude. I'm 6'4" and over 200 pounds. I'm plussing up no matter what. If it's a, if I'm taking a hunting buddy, I'm going to take a big old tent with me. Just because I can barely fit in a two-man by myself. I have to sleep corner to corner, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, awesome. It sounds like where was that again? That was Idaho?
That was Montana.
Montana.
So we hunted spring bear in Idaho, and I went to Montana for elk, and then we went in November is when we were able to link up, you know, Travis's family stuff had kind of stabilized out, and we went and hunt an area that this was my third year there that I've been kind of pioneering and learning, and I finally got to take Travis along and show him what all my hard work has kind of come down to.
It's about time, paid me back.
Well, if I remember right, it paid off really well. It seemed like you guys had a great hunt out there.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it. So Montana deer.
Yeah.
The funny thing about Montana deer, there's no illusion. It was not a backpack hunt. and it was, I kind of joked repeatedly that I was going to have to give up backpack hunting after this, cause it was way too easy and it was too much. We had way too much fun. I mean, we were seeing 10 to 15 bucks every day. And, I mean, just driving around, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you said driving around. I was going to say, let's talk about your hunting methods on this and how you guys executed such a great hunt. Why don't you kind of talk about it, how it went?
Heated leather.
Yeah.
Climate control duel.
Yeah.
You know, so he could be at 65 and I could be at 63 degrees.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah. So I hunt in West Texas, man. That's how we hunt. We road hunt. And occasionally I'll get out of the truck and go walk a few drainages when you don't really need to. Literally the other day, of course, it was a week after deer season, but I saw probably one of the biggest 3-point mule deer bucks I've ever seen in West Texas. And he was standing 30 yards off the side of the road, just standing there looking at me like, what are you going to do, man? It's not season anymore. So I think there's something to be said for that road hunting. And I mentioned it the other day in a podcast with me and Jordan where I said, I want to do another podcast soon that I'm just going to call Why Base Camp and Truck Hunting is Still Cool. Because I think we've kind of lost.
It really is.
I think we've kind of lost. Like right now, and this, whatever, this is my picture of the community that we're in. Everybody wants to do that 7 miles deep stuff. Right. And sure, there's necessity for it, but I think there's sometimes when you could set up a base camp with a big wall tent and a nice heater, coolers full of beer and brats and steaks and whatever else you want. Right.
Well, it felt more, you know, and another friend of ours who hunts out there, I mean, he had always said it's his vacation hunt is how he describes it. Mm-hmm. And that's the meaning of that has a lot more relevance to me now. We didn't work hard. it's hard to say that, but we just didn't work that hard.
In addition to all the comforts of being able to have a roadside camp, there's also something we said for me, who Travis has affectionately referred to as the sleep monster, about hunting in November.
Yeah.
Because you can sleep in until like 6:30 and it's awesome.
Yep. And then start cooking breakfast and coffee, right. You know?
The hardest part, I got, you know, I think it stems from experiences prior, you know, in the backcountry where we would see a lot of animals, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, it would just shut off for like 3 or 4 days and we wouldn't see a critter. And I started getting really, really jumpy on like day two. Feeling like I needed to kill something because I was like, this is going to stop. And it never did. It never stopped. And that was pretty cool. I don't know. I ended up shooting, a buck I was super happy with. And then Daniels had to, he had to show me his own trigger restraint on that buck the next morning. And mm-hmm. then he ended up shooting a dang nice deer. So it was awesome, man. I'm still giddy about it and upset that I'm not going this year, but that's how it's going to be. So,
well, you guys have a better hunt in line. something else I wanted to touch on Montana was the temperatures that you guys had to deal with. So it was brutal, right? Wasn't it?
Didn't you guys? Like zero.
It was zero.
Right. Okay. So talk about your I got the day part. That's easy, man. That's crank on the heater and roll up the windows and do whatever to stay warm. But
you know, the thing about it though is you got so the first year I went, I absolutely froze. And it was, you know, it was just something, I don't know. I wasn't, my feet were cold, my body was cold, and I just didn't have the layering system dialed in. The next year was better. And this year I feel like the layering system was pretty dialed in. I dress for what I want to be moving in. You know, if we glass up a buck at 1200, even if it's from the road system, what do I want to wear to go after him? And then we just make the temperature in the truck match. But as far as, you know, the rest of dealing with the cold, we run two sleeping bags. Neither of us own like a negative 20 or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So we run our regular 10 degree quilts, and then we just drape another sleeping bag over the top.
Gotcha.
And so then it's 8 or 10 inches aloft. It's pretty great.
Yeah. So I took that lesson from you guys. I can't remember. I guess it was you, Scott. You and I've talked a lot about heaters and ways to stay warm, because I struggled in Colorado with some temperatures, not 0 degrees. It was like 20 degrees, but
yeah.
When you come from Texas, dude, it's 78 degrees here in Texas today. So, but I did that same thing. I had a 6 a.m. quilt, and then I had to take like a smaller sleeping bag and get into the sleeping bag and then put my feet inside the quilt and then just let that thing kind of drape over me. So, and that was solid. That helped a lot.
Well, and it makes a lot more sense to me, rather than owning like a negative 20 bag that I'm only going to use a little bit. Like, so Travis, he used his regular quilt that we use all the time. And then he used his old Marmot sleeping bag that he already owned from, you know, back in the day.
Right.
And then I use the double quilt that my wife and I use when we go together. I use that as my drape.
There you go. Very perfect. What about a heater? So this is what you and I talked pretty extensively about heaters. What'd you guys use to keep the, and then also what tent were you sleeping in?
So the first year I went out there, I slept in the back of my truck, and my buddy brought a sawtooth. But there's no wood. There's no wood out there. And so it was kind of, we had like a buddy heater and like a propane dish heater, and it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. The next year I went solo. And so I just slept in my rig all the time. And I would just, if it started getting a little too chilly, I'd just reach up and start the thing. But with Travis coming this year, I was proactive throughout the summer. And I took my North Face, what's the name of it? I can't remember the name of it. It's a giant, like three season base camping tent. And it's, I want to say, 8x10 on the main side, and then it's got a giant vestibule. So I went and I picked up a New Ways propane stove, and I cut a hole in it and sewed the jack in and ran that thing, make it a, you know, a heated shelter. So it was I would say it was successful. That heater isn't enough to take the edge off at zero. Mm-mm. You know, it's not enough to get warm. It's enough to take the edge off and make it survivable though.
Yeah. And that's what's important. Were you guys running that thing all night, or were you just running it at nighttime and then in the morning?
No, we just run it. Well, when we'd get back to camp at dark, we'd crank it up and set our dinner on top. We took a bunch of kind of like sous vide type meals, and we just put them in a pot on top of the stove. So the stove would get ripping and start warming up the tent, and our dinner would be cooking. Mm-hmm. And then same thing in the morning, you know, we'd set the alarm for like a half hour before we actually wanted to leave. And we'd just get that thing cranking and set a pot of coffee on top and let that coffee warm up. And by the time the coffee was ready, the tent was kind of warm-ish, warm enough to crawl out of your sleeping bag at least.
Sort of.
Better than 0 degrees, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's important, because 0 degrees is no fun for anybody. So
there's definitely... Definitely a better tent option would be something that had less draft. But you know, this is a tent that I own for other purposes that it I kind of wanted. Yeah. I kind of wanted to, this was, we got like some blizzard weather, and it held up like a champ.
Yeah.
Like,
that one night was scary.
Yeah.
So
I really like this tent. The Wawana 6, that's what it's called.
Is it a wall tent or a dome tent or what's?
It's a dome tent, but it's like standing height throughout. You got to stoop a little bit in the vestibule, but it's great. You know, we take it on all our family camping trips. You know, my wife, when we had our daughter, we started camping with her when she was like 3 months old. You know, because her and I, we've done a lot of backpacking and some aggressive trips, but we didn't want to be stuck inside all summer. So she put it to me. She was like, if you want me to go camping with an infant, I want something that I can stand up to dress in and I don't have to sleep on the ground and I can put a chair in to nurse in. And so I said, all right, I'll make that happen. So I did a bunch of research and I came home with this tent. She's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Oh my bluff. Now we got to go camping. Yeah, with the exactly. Baby.
Dang it. He figured it out. So, I'm looking at that right now online. That's a pretty sweet tent.
Yeah. So, you know, my tent requirements for a big base camping tent are not all that dissimilar from a backpacking tent. Other than I don't care too much about the weight. It's got to go up fast. I got to be able to do it in the dark by myself in like 10 minutes. And it's got to be stout, you know? I mean, like we were up at Mount Baker in like a day and a half long rain squall in this thing. And we've got a little baby with us. Like we can't be getting all wet and, you know, having seams fail or anything like that. So, it's been solid.
Yeah.
It's been a really, really solid tent. We've taken it on river rafting trips. This year in Montana was its first time getting snowed on, but I mean, this thing's been,
and wind was bad.
I mean, it holds up, man. It's got, you know, the guy outs could be a little bit higher up on it, but they're definitely adequate.
And where'd you put the stove jack?
It's in the vertical wall in the vestibule.
Okay. Oh, okay. Very good.
So, yeah.
So even then it's not even really on the floor or anything like that.
Yeah. So there's no flooring out there. It's a spot that, you know, when I was cutting a hole in my $400 tent, I was like, God, if this thing leaks, at least it's not like in the main body of the tent.
Yeah.
And luckily it actually, I mean, the stove install went pretty well. It doesn't even leak. So, you know, I guess I did an okay job.
Got a new career path.
Yeah, I don't, there you go. Yeah, there you go. Stove jack installer, professional. Yeah. Good. How about gear upgrades? What have you guys changed this year from last year? It's right now is that time of year where everybody's like, well, that thing sucked, or I want something new. Time to start upgrading. What are you guys changing this year?
Well, I got lucky. So I had a pair of Leopolds that were a couple years old. And my binoculars are really my last.
You own them as long as I've known you. They were not a couple years old.
Well, I had sent them back in. They sent me a new pair. So. But this is the third time I had the iCups fail. So I sent it back to Leopold, and they upgraded me like two levels of binoculars and sent me a brand new pair of BX4 guides. And I just at this point, I knew I had an opportunity to sell some brand new binoculars and take some cash out of it and upgrade my glass a little bit. And I just happened to stumble across a guy that was selling a pair of used, the Cabela's Euros, the Mioptas.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting a smoking deal on them, and it just ended up working out. I mean, you know, sold the Leopolds and bought the Mioptas. And I really wish I would have done it earlier. I mean, I haven't taken it on a trip yet, but I've been sitting outside watching my hillside at 1600 yards that I can see from my house. And it's a pretty dramatic improvement. And then I guess we also did our rangefinders too. I kind of forgot about that.
Oh yeah.
So we had, I guess this kind of ties back into Montana. We had we had some failures in cold temperatures with the SIG kilos.
I've had nothing but problems with that SIG.
And I hadn't had the same issue Scott had. And so, but we were, it was not ranging in cold weather. And that was a problem in Montana. Cause it, you know, we can kind of touch back on that a little bit too.
It's cost me a bunch of deer.
The style of hunting in Montana was dramatically different than anything that I've ever done before. The deer are, you know, are busting at 1,000 yards and stuff like that. I mean, you just gotta. Everything's very fast. I mean, it's. But anyways, so I swapped my bino harness as well. My Kuyu one, which served me well. I've got no negative things to say about that. It just had been the mice finally I had it held together with tape, with Leuco tape, and so it was time to upgrade. And I went with the marsupial, and from the living room, it's pretty good. But we'll see how after a season if I still like it. And then we both got the Leopold.
RX 2800s.
Yep. And so far so good. Scott put it in the freezer for like
an hour.
and then pulled it out and ranged it, and it was money right out of the freezer. So we have a little bit higher hopes on this one. So
yeah. I'm with you guys, man. I have the Sig Kilo 2000, and I've had some problems with that thing too. So that's likely going to get upgraded this year.
I had the 2000. I will say Sig's customer service is fantastic.
Yeah, they're good, but
I had the 2000. Had some problems with it, mainly in Montana. Sent it back to them. I had a brand new 2200 in like less than 7 business days from the time I shipped it out to the time the new one was on my porch. Mm-hmm. So that was great, and I was like, okay, you know, this is a new model. It seems okay. I'm gonna give it a shot. I shouldn't have. I should have done the new inbox sale right then and there, because it gave me nothing but problems. Yeah. Again in Montana, and it cost some animals.
Yeah, it cost me a deer. It cost you a deer.
So I sent it back again. They sent me a new one, and I did the same thing. I sold it new inbox and bought a different one.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, mine's fine most of the time, but I've had some issues with it. Sometimes I just don't know if it's given me like true distance or that angled compensated distance.
Oh yeah,
and that's a struggle to me, because I'm like, man, I know I'm shooting at a pretty steep angle. I don't know if that's 100 yards or if I should be shooting for 70, or it's just, I don't know. Trust issues, well, I guess. I have trust issues.
And that's exactly it. If you don't have confidence in that thing, there's no point in packing it. And that's where I was at with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I had an AK-47 Safe Queen that went up on GunBroker, and so I'm probably going to be upgrading my rifle scope too shortly. We're in a lot of discussion right now, and Scott hasn't decided what I'm going to buy yet. So,
well, when he decides, let me know, because I'm always curious.
I hate his scope.
What do you run right now?
I've got Athlon Cronus on there, and I actually like that scope. It's not. But Scott hates it, and I don't know why his hatred is so deep. But it's heavy. It is heavy.
Yeah.
But
what are you thinking to upgrade to? What are you thinking, Scott?
Is the MK5 is one of those.
The Mark V is one you're looking at,
and the NX8.
NX8
or a smoke. I mean, and I've seen, if I had some cash a couple weeks ago, they had an attacker for I think 1700 that was up. And it was like, if I had the funds already, I would have jumped all over that. Mm-hmm. So,
you picked up that that Stone Glacier puffy jacket.
Oh, like, yeah,
that thing a lot.
Yeah, I
pants
and yeah, yep. So
the
I
whole marshmallow my, suit.
yeah, the Goodyear man. No, my Kuyu one. I mean, it served me great for. I mean, I bought that in 2013, right? So. Yeah, on our first hunt, and it served me great. It just it's losing loft. It's got burn holes and
you use it as an outer layer.
I do use it as an outer layer, and so it's beat up, and so I swapped over to the Stone Glacier, and it's tough. I mean, it certainly feels like there's more loft in that Stone Glacier, and it kept me pretty warm. So I've been really happy with it. So
they've got some really nice stuff this year. I'm very impressed, and their sleeping bag that they came out with last year is super intriguing. It's a down bag.
Oh, the XBed Mega Light Mat. I've had a Mega Mat Duo for a few years, and it's better than some hotel beds I've slept on. Honestly, it's great. And you know, but it's big. It's packed size is big. It's expanded size is big. And so I wanted something that was a little better for sleeping in the back of my rig. I have a 4Runner. And so I do a lot of sleeping at trailheads or like sleeping halfway to a hunt. I just make my little bunk with my gear packed all around me, and I just climb back there when I'm done driving for the day. So I wanted something that suited that better. And then with this Alaska hunt kind of on the forefront, I wanted something that was going to be better for flying in places. Mm-hmm. you know, I got dreams of hunting the Frank Church someday, you know, so I wanted a good pad for fly-in hunts and stuff like that. So I picked up the XBed Mega Light, and it is awesome. It is such a game changer for my sleep. It makes me not want to backpack sleeping on that thing.
Yeah, so I talked a lot about the XBed Mega Mat on the Arizona Coos Deer podcast that I did with Jordan. And I'm totally impressed by that thing. I haven't seen the light. I'm actually pulling it up right now.
It packs down to like a gallon water jug size. So okay. It's not, and it's like 5 pounds. So it's not, it's not something you put in your pack, but you know, I mean, I don't have a crew cab long bed truck, you know, so space is a little bit out of premium, even on a road based hunt. And then when you think about a fly in, like, I can stomach 5 pounds for this thing, man. It's thick, it's comfy, it's warm.
Oh, you get 1200, right?
Yeah. So, but not just, I mean, I know. You know, like flying in a 206 or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, honestly, everything I have from them is pretty damn good. They just make top of the line sleeping pads.
So I'm going to try to get them to come on the podcast, because I think that I use a couple of their products and I'm getting ready to buy one of their sleeping bags. But I just think a lot of times companies like XBed, I think when they're sold in big box stores like REI, that people tend to automatically say they're not a hunting based company and they don't support hunting. And what I've found about XBed is they're totally supportive of hunting, and they're behind us all the time. And yeah. So I kind of want to bring them on to be able to tell their story and talk about, you know, that they do support hunting. And I'm totally impressed with their products. That's why I'm looking for a good sleeping bag. I don't really have a good, I have a quilt, and then I have an old army sleeping bag that weighs about 20 pounds. So I want to try out one of their bags and get that thing going and see what I
think. Yeah, I haven't used any of their bags, so you'll have to let me know how it turns out.
Yeah, definitely. I think as we start to close this thing up, let's talk about your hunt that you got planned for this year up in Alaska briefly, because so for the listeners, Scott and Travis and I were talking before the show, and I think we're going to do a before and after podcast for this hunt. So we'll just kind of briefly talk about it a little bit, where you're going, what you're hunting, kind of what the plan is. And then we're going to circle back to this topic later on this summer, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of, this is about 3 years in the making now, this hunt.
Yeah, I think so.
We were going to go last year and things just didn't really pan out. And so we pushed it out a year and
Which
it ended
I think
up working out.
It's going to be even better.
Yeah.
An extra year to kind of iron out some theoreticals, I think, is going to really work.
And so we're heading up to Kodiak Island in Alaska to go hunt Sitka blacktail. And we're going to fly into Kodiak City and then take a bush flight out the following morning. And I think we're planning on being in for 6 days, right?
Yeah, something like that.
And then we got a scheduled pickup on Friday.
Friday morning.
And then we're planning, in theory, we'd like to do a day of fishing too, and then we fly back out on Sunday. So we're going to be gone for, it's about a 10-day trip, I think.
We have like a little cushion in there in case we get stuck in the field too long or whatever. And if we don't use it, we're going to go fishing.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. Sounds pretty awesome, actually.
Halibut, salmon, kind of top off those meat boxes before we fly home.
Yep. Have you guys done the? Nope, I don't want to talk about it yet. We're going to save it. I was going to say, have you done the research on how to get it all home and do all that? But we're going to save that for when we do the podcast. So, and when was the dates on that again?
We fly out
July 31st.
July 31st.
Yep. Okay, very good. So let me write that down, because I'll have you guys on a couple weeks before. This podcast is brought to you by OnX Hunt. Use OnX Hunt to share crucial map information like waypoints, routes, campsites, and much more with your hunting partners. Use the tracker to stay on track in the field and know where you stand. Save 20% on your premium or elite membership when you use the promo code ROOKIES today. Okay. You guys got anything else you want to touch on? Scott, Travis, you want to talk about your book real quick?
So, I mean, I think it was like April of last year is when we released the book, and it has been quite the ride. You know, some of my own personal, I was really enjoying writing the blog on the website, which was kind of a nice add-on or addendum to the book and whatnot. And as Scott kind of alluded to earlier, I had some pretty serious, or my wife had some pretty serious medical issues that she's been fighting. And that kind of took a lot of drive out of some of the marketing portion of the book. But it's continuing on. And I think the only major change is that I've decided to not order more paperback copies once this current run is out. And that's just more of it's a lot of work to be shipping these books out of the house and whatnot. And it's going to remain in an ebook form only. So I think I've got about 25 copies left. So once those are gone, they're gone. And I'm not saying I won't print them in the future again, but for right now, I'm just going to kind of shelve that as my wife continues. She's still on her journey herself. So, I mean, I think we're just trying to take some things off of our plate. So, but yeah, it's far exceeded my expectations for success. It's been awesome.
So tell me about the book. What's it about?
I guess I was going back to the old one. So Team Bad Decision, is the story of Scott and I. I mean, it's how we met and how we got into backpack hunting. We were as green as it gets when it came to the backcountry. And I think the further away I get from it, I was greener than I thought when it came to big game hunting in general. It's kind of our evolution of how we self-taught ourselves to be successful and unsuccessful as well in the backcountry. And I find it really ironic after Montana this year that I spent all this time writing a book about how to backcountry hunt, and we're never going to backcountry hunt again. So,
yeah, right. Well, now you just got to learn how to truck hunt. That's it.
Right. That's right. Yes. Yeah. And the next book will be Team Bad Decision, Truck Hunting.
Truck hunting. It'll be a really short, short story. Yeah. But, well, that's cool, man. It's a great book. I know everybody that's read it, including myself, we all give it great reviews. It's just a cool story and it's well written. So if you haven't heard of, for the listeners, if you're not familiar with Team Bad Decision, what's your website? How do people get a hold of you? What's your website? How do they find the book? How do they do all of that stuff?
You can get the paperback copies at www.teambaddecision.com. And then the ebook is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, all the big sites. Actually, next month we're going to be, which is kind of cool, we're going to have a full feature-length preview. I think they're going to use the prologue is what they ended up using in Northwest Sportsman Magazine, which is a regional magazine that gets Oregon, Washington, Idaho. But they're going to preview the book in there, which is kind of cool. And then we also got into Western Hunter this year as well. So it's been pretty fun. Like you kind of alluded to, I'm always surprised that people. I mean, as an author, it's always scary to put your stuff out, right? And it's been the reviews and the reception have been really positive, and that's been really cool. So
yeah, good. Well, congratulations on it. I'm glad it's doing well for you. Okay, so teambaddecision.com, and then what's your Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff?
Our Instagram is ST_teambaddecision, and then we have our Facebook group, which is facebook.com. I think it's Team Bad Decision Book. If you search Team Bad Decision, I think we're one of only two or three things that'll pop up, so it should be pretty easy to find. So.
Okay, gotcha. Well, awesome. Guys, I appreciate you coming on today and just kind of BSing a little bit and talking about what you did and what's up, what's coming up and all of that kind of stuff. So thanks a lot, man. Yeah. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. All right, guys, just a reminder before we close this thing out, check us out on social media and check out the website. So we're at Backcountry Rookies on Instagram, Backcountry Rookies on Facebook. We have our own private Facebook group called the Backcountry Rookies Nation, where people are welcome to come in there and share and ask questions, and they get answers. And we've got a huge group of people that's everybody from experts to rookies. So there's a whole wealth of knowledge in there to ask questions. And website, backcountryrookies.com. Check all that stuff out. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Bye.